Our reading this morning is by the author Amy Tan. It's called Saying Thanks to My Ghosts. Tan writes, I didn't used to believe in ghosts, but I was trained to talk to them. My mother reminded me many times that I had the gift. It all stemmed from a lie I told when I was 4. The way my mother remembered it, I refused to get ready for bed one night, claiming there was a ghost in the bathroom. She was delighted to learn I was a spirit medium. Thereafter, she questioned anything unusual, a sudden gust of wind, a vase that fell and shattered. She would ask me, "She here?" She met my grandmother. When I was a child, my mother told me that my grandmother died in great agony after she accidentally ate too much opium. My mother was 9 years old when she watched this happen. When I was 14, my older brother was stricken with a brain tumor. My mother begged me to ask my grandmother to save him. When he died, she asked me to talk to him as well. "I don't know how," I protested. And when my father died of a brain tumor 6 months after my brother, she made me use a Ouija board. She wanted to know if they still loved her. I spelled out the answer I knew she wanted to hear. Yes. Always. When I became a fiction writer in my 30s, I wrote a story about a woman who killed herself eating too much opium. After my mother read a draft of that story, she had tears in her eyes. Now she had proof. My grandmother had talked to me and told me her true story. How else could I have known? My grandmother had not died by accident, but with the fury of suicide. She asked me, "Is she here now?" I answered honestly, "I don't know." Over the years, I've included other details in my writing I could not possibly have known on my own, a place, a character, a song. I have come to feel differently about my ghost writers. Sometimes their clues have come so plentifully, they've made me laugh like a child who can't open birthday presents fast enough. I must say thanks, not to blind luck, but to my ghosts. And 10 years ago, I clearly saw a ghost, and she talked to me. It was my mother. She had died just 24 hours before. Her face was 10 times larger than life in the form of a moving, pulsing hologram of sparkling lights. My mother was laughing at my surprise. She drew closer, and when she reached me, I felt as if I had been physically punched in the chest. It took my breath away and filled me with something absolute, love, but also joy and peace. And with that, understanding that love and joy and peace are all the same thing. Joy comes from love. Peace comes from love. "Now you know," my mother said. "I believe in ghosts. Whenever I want, they will always be there. My mother, my grandmother, my ghosts." So as I hope has been quite clear, our monthly theme is ghosts and ancestors, which is perhaps not the theme that most Unitarian Universalists might expect of their congregation. I sort of imagined reactions of several types. Something like, "Ghosts, I'm a person of science and reason. Don't tell me about these supernatural things." Or, "Ghosts, cool, let me tell you about my experience with ghosts." Or, "Is this about that new Ghostbusters movie?" Or, "Ghosts, what on earth are our ministers going to spend 4 Sundays talking about?" 5, actually. We have 5 Sundays this month. So though I recommend the Ghostbusters movie, both the 1980s version and the more recent one, I think they're great. You should see them as soon as possible. But I'm not here to play movie critic. Though again, this summer's version is really lovely and probably the most female empowering movie I've ever seen in some ways. Thank you. So let's talk about ghosts. I don't know what to think about ghosts, unlike Amy Tan, at least in the supernatural sort of floating spirit of those who have died since. And yet I have friends and family who I know and love and trust who tell me about experiences they've had with this sort of thing. I have no obvious explanation. There are at least 3 Unitarian Universalist churches that make some extra income by having ghost tours. I don't know if they believe in it either, but they're willing to make some money off of it. And yet, I'm the sort of person that tends to rely on what I can see and taste and hear. And so I work to hold these tensions together. And I completely believe in ghosts in a different sense, because they're all around us. We are surrounded by the ghosts of those who have come before. We live in places where many others have lived before us. We live in systems and processes and governments and countries that were started before any of us were alive and affect our lives every single day. We're surrounded by these ghosts. For me, I feel my grandfather's presence, not a man who spoke a whole lot, but a creator. He worked his entire life with his hands, doing woodwork and pattern making, and later creating books about the process of his work. Here in this building and others like it, I feel the ghosts of the past, the architects and builders who made this, all the people who have worshiped and learned and lived here, ministers who have preached from this pulpit before me. Maybe you too have some ghosts like this in your life. I think our call, part of it at least, is to make peace with our ghosts, some of them friendly and some not so friendly. Some of them providing us helpful things and some of them useful only as examples of what we should never do again. In fact, nowhere is this more apparent for me than what we as a country are going through right now. We are wrestling, not yet making peace, with who we are and who we have been and what that means. I don't expect this to be an easy process. It hasn't been so far. I don't expect it in this time and place to be any easier when we are told to make America great again, though I am unclear just what was so great about it to those people and when exactly it was great. And another example, Black Lives Matter has called us to do this very sort of work too, engaging racial tensions and the racist foundations of our country, and thinking about what we can do in this present moment. So let's engage with our ghosts. I'm new to this area, and yet I'm fascinated by its history. The land upon which we live now has its own ghosts. In this part of the world, we often start history with when people of European descent arrived, and yet that's not entirely true at all. Though Europeans had been in and near San Francisco Bay for almost 200 years, the first of them to set foot in this particular part of the bay was in 1776, also a significant date for our larger country for a different reason. Before 1776, no Europeans or those of European descent had been in this particular part of the bay up here on the north. In fact, just a few years before that, no Europeans had spent much time here at all. So before 1776, and for some years after, this area was occupied almost exclusively by the Chochenyo Huchin band of the Ohlone people, something we would do well to remember. We were not first. Evidence of their existence is still here. Though many of the shell mounds they created have been leveled for housing, there are still pits in rock formations where you can see they made acorn paste, the main food product. So in 1776, the De Anza expedition came here, and things began to change. Soon the area was carved up into ranch land by Spanish and then Mexican settlers. Large-scale settlement started some decades later in the mid-1800s and accelerated greatly after 1900 when people from San Francisco, fleeing fires and other sorts of things, came here in large numbers. Let's talk about those ghosts. The Ohlone people deserve far more time than I have to devote here, but let us not forget their ghosts around us and their continued presence, because several thousand Ohlone still live, many of them, in this area. The Bay Area has so many more ghosts of the various cultures that have lived and in many cases still live here. Those Spanish explorers and missionaries, the 49ers coming for gold, the complex and rich and interesting history of Black people in the Bay, waves of Asian immigration, both old and new, peoples from Central and South America, and others too numerous to name, though I might lift up the almost overwhelming presence of East Coasters coming out here all the time, right? It's kind of a joke since I just came from the East Coast, right? We are both the beneficiaries and the ones responsible for this legacy. We benefit from what we have learned, often what we have taken, and we are responsible for not abusing others in the process. We fail at this too often, and we must do better. Our country wrestles with our ghosts all the time, often without acknowledging we are even doing so. We live with the ghosts of slavery and sharecropping, of federalism and anti-federalism, of xenophobia, and some good ghosts too, that we don't so much wrestle as play with, I like to think. We have a legacy of freedom, or at least the idea of it. A relatively stable democracy, a legacy of invention, and a stumbling and difficult but real progress on social issues. Even the idea of America itself is a friendly ghost for us. The reality has not been so friendly. We carry this with us, perhaps especially strongly in this election season and this time of Black Lives Matter and of Native people's protests against mistreatment of their land. And as I said, though I'm new here, I'm guessing the ghosts of Berkeley past are very much in play here, good and bad. Are we as radical as we once were? Or is the value we're most concerned about today our property value? What does it mean to be liberal or religious or liberal and religious in 2016 in the East Bay? I don't have the answer to this. I have some thoughts, but I mean this is a real question we should wrestle with, we should play with, that we can find answers to together. One I hope we will approach with a spirit of openness and honesty. How do we make peace with our ghosts, friendly or otherwise? I think we start by acknowledging their very presence among us, something I have hoped to start doing today. We own that we are affected by our past, but not owned by it. And this means dealing with the legacy of who we are as a nation and a government. It means wrestling with the legacy of systemic oppression, the reality of white privilege. It means looking at how those ghosts and legacies and patterns and processes are alive and well in our lives, even if it's far past their time. I do this in my own life, often in small ways, occasionally in big ones. I'm the sort of person, maybe a few of you are too, who replays almost endlessly in my mind awkward conversations or little mistakes I've made or even bad experiences, thinking about how it could have just in a tiny way gone differently that might have changed everything. I've worked for a long time not to let these things, these little ghostlets, lead me into making the same mistake the next time. And I struggle too with the ghosts of our country and society, the biases I carry with me, structural inequities alive in our world. And I embrace some of those positive ghosts, the memories of family members now gone and the heritage I carry with me even more. I see ghosts of those who have come before me in this faith, those Unitarians and Universalists who have paved the way for all of us to be here. Those people like Martha and Waitstill Sharp, who we discussed last week, who have given us an example to live up to. I have mentors still here with me, whose voices sound in my head constantly. Others who are gone, even those who I only know from their work and legacies. How do we embrace, or at least make peace, with our ghosts, so we can be the people we have been called to be, do the things we are called to do, create the world we dream about? To start, it takes honesty and openness, courage and support, compassion, and so much more. Our ghosts are with us, and they're not going anywhere. Our call is not to be ghostbusters, locking away unfriendly spirits. But it's also not to close our eyes to the legacy we carry. And we are people who can do this. So all month long in worship, we'll talk about some of these ghosts and how they live with, in, and among us, and how we can live with them. What we as a community and as individuals might do about this. We'll explore how we can live lives of integrity and justice and love and compassion and be a part of a new world, ever dawning, ever new, but tied into the legacy we have been given.